Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world. At the winter meetings, I'm Jake Pintz. That's Jordan Schusterman, and we've never lost.
Winners only here in Nashville, Tennessee, at the most over-the-top resort that I certainly have been to in quite some time, known as the Opryland here. Is it in Nashville? Sort of, technically. It's certainly closer to Nashville than any other major American city. Good morning, Jake. It's Monday. We're going to do a baseball podcast. We're going to do a lot of baseball podcasts this week. Are you excited about that?
I'm very excited. For those of you who don't know, the winter meetings are an excuse for the entire baseball world to be in one place for a couple of days in early December. It happens every year. It's always at a resort the size of 25 football stadiums. And it's a maze. And do things happen at the winter meetings? Are there transactions and trades and signings? Yes. But the reason this exists is so people like us can see other people like us. And so it might not be the most important, relevant thing for you, the listener, but just know that for the baseball industry, there is real purpose and meaning to these days.
Yes, yes, because it is definitely an opportunity for people to meet face-to-face, even though I'm sure most of the trade-related negotiations are happening on the same way that they would if they were across the country from each other, even if they're in suites next door. I'm certain that a lot of the transactions that will happen just in the same way that they would have anyway. But that's fine. I'm very excited to be here. I'm very happy to be here. I'm glad we're here podcasting all week. We're doing a couple pods every day. And we already have something to talk about.
That's true.
We will get to. That's, of course, the main transaction we have, the Mariners and Braves trade that dropped late on Sunday night. But we'll also, you know, preview what else we expect to maybe hopefully see. You know, if that's the only thing that happens here, that would be disappointing. So, especially for me personally. So we will get into all that. But any other scene setting we need to do here? I mean, it's
we'll set the scene. I just wanted one more thing about the winter meetings is, like many things in society, it is an appendage of the past. Mm. Where the winter meetings exist because in 1960, whatever the hell, there were phones, I believe.
Yep.
But shouts out to Alexander Graham.
Yep.
But if you wanted to make a trade, it was much easier to do that in person. So they would all go to all the GMs, would go to one place, and they would have a bunch of whiskey, and they would make all the trades, mm-hmm. and then they would go home. Now that we have these things called cell phones, mm-hmm. it's not as necessary anymore. Yep. And so, but just like managers wearing uniforms in the dugout, mm-hmm. it endures the test of time mm-hmm. for no reason. Mm-hmm. And so just a little bit of behind the scenes, that is why the winter meetings exist the way that they do.
Yeah. And I think, you know, now that we have the GM meetings that kind of start the offseason, that's where a lot of trade talks kind of start to formulate. But you won't actually hear the GMs and POBOs actually say what they're up to. But it does feel like this does seem to spur action. And I would say in this case, it seems like stuff has been bubbling. And the reason why a lot of stuff is held up is, of course, on the Ohtani front, which we'll get to. But it does feel like, at the very least, there are some teams that are saying, all right, fuck it. Like, we got to start doing something to our roster. There's a lot of work to do. There's a lot of free agents out there. There's a lot of things we want to change. And so I think we will start to see some action. I think more likely on the trade front this week. But, I mean, last year, we had a lot of free agency action.
We did.
At the winter meetings. So
yes, we did.
Maybe that will happen again.
If you work for an athleisure company mm-hmm. and you're not selling as many quarter zips as you want,
this is a great place to go.
Get on over here.
Hawking it real easy over here. Everyone's looking for a new fresh quarter zip, all kinds of.
You're wearing one right now?
I am. I wouldn't call it. Mine is not in the athleisure category. It's a little bit more warm. And I might regret that as if the hot stove continues to heat up, I will be sweating profusely. But I'm comfortable and I'm excited.
Let's start with the Mariners Braves trade, and then we'll make some jokes about the winter meetings itself. Late last night, you and I were enjoying a nice cold beverage with alcohol in it.
Wow.
Here. Yeah, that's
Damn.
Okay. We're old enough.
Exposed.
We're legal. That's
all. It wasn't just us. There were a lot of people that were.
This is where we got through prohibition. It's fine. The Mariners and Braves made a trade. And I found out about it before you did.
Yeah.
I walked over to you. I said, did you see the trade? And you said, no. And I said, well, you're about to.
Which is very, by the way, a nice little role reversal there.
Yeah.
You know, we've had a lot of me revealing stuff to Jake in the past. And we've had people joke, say, hey, you know, do this. We should do this next year. You know, Jordan should be in the dark. But the reality is I am normally the one that is on Twitter more consistently keeping track of stuff than you.
And I'm happier.
Congratulations. But in this case, I was enjoying being
a conversation.
I had not taken my phone out of my pocket for probably an hour plus. And then, but because things are happening here, this is what happened. So did you see it because someone told you you did look at your phone?
I looked at my phone, which was okay. Yeah. It's fine.
No, it's okay. I'm not
fine.
No judgment. I'm just curious because I didn't see you. You just came over and said, look at this.
I looked at my phone and saw the news. Jeff Passan of ESPN reported that the Seattle Mariners and Atlanta Braves had consummated a swap. Mm-hmm. Your Mariners that you own, maybe you should, sent Jared Kelnick. Marco Gonzalez.
Yep.
And Evan White to the Atlanta Braves in exchange for Jackson Coar and a minor league pitcher named Cole Phillips. There are a lot of different angles and layers to this trade. So let's just start from the 70,000 feet bird's eye view.
Yes.
There are two ways to look at this trade from a Mariners perspective. One is that they are slashing payroll because they don't intend on spending money, and ownership has given them an edict to get payroll under a certain number. That's one move. The other is that they are cutting payroll in order to make a move later on. Those are the only two options for the Seattle Mariners. This trade is essentially a salary dump, getting rid of the $7 million that were on Evan White's contract for this year.
And then another eight for the next year.
Which
is not insignificant for a player that might not be a major leaguer. Yeah, right.
And then Marco was around 13.
Yep.
So before we kind of zoom in, let's just like quick synopsis of the players in this trade. I think would be helpful for people.
Sure.
Jared Kelnick, you probably know, 6th overall pick by the Mets, goes to the Mariners in the Cano-Diaz trade. Top prospect, gets up. First two seasons, totally ass. This year, figures some things out early on in the season. Slides a little bit in the middle of the year. Kicks a cooler, breaks his foot, comes back down the stretch for the playoff push. Spiky hair from Wisconsin. Still only 23 years old. Lot left on the bone, lot in the tank from a developmental perspective. He's the prize of this for the Braves. Marco Gonzalez was the longest tenured Mariner, back of the rotation starter at this point in his career. A little bit expensive for the Mariners, who are able to kind of pump out back of the rotation starters like they're a Pez dispenser.
Yep.
He's probably going to be in Atlanta's rotation next year. Evan White, top pick, given an extension before he reached the big leagues with the Mariners, has struggled with injuries and a lack of production. He at this point is sunk cost, and they just wanted to get that away from that contract. From the other side, who are Coar and Phillips?
So Coar, the Braves just acquired for Kyle Wright last week. It was basically Kyle Wright had shoulder surgery. He's not going to pitch in 2024. Maybe at the time they think Jackson Coar could be a bounce back reliever candidate, throws really hard, has been a disaster in Kansas City, but so have a lot of pitchers in Kansas City. So you're basically betting, okay, he throws hard and there's something we can work with here. Best secondary pitch is a changeup, but his ERA is literally like 10 in not a small sample of major league time.
You want it to be three digits, your ERA usually, and not four?
Yes. So it's ridiculous. Anyway, so that's Jackson Coar. Great. I mean, he does not project to be in the Mariners bullpen right now, but if they can turn him into Cy Young, would not be surprising. And then Cole Phillips was a second round pick, high school, big Texas righty, high schooler, 2022 draft, got Tommy John basically right before the draft, hasn't thrown a pitch as a pro, was highly touted as an amateur, signed for well over $1 million, but again, it's a high school right-hander who has not thrown a professional pitch. And it's like, okay, that he could be a real prospect. He could come back healthy and he's thrown upper 90s, whatever. But that kind of player is not important to what Seattle needs to do right now. I mean, it is a real prospect, but correct. For the bigger picture here, which is Mariners fans trying to digest this trade, it's hard to care much about that part of it, right? And Jackson Coar. So as you mentioned, okay, it's those two things. Let's talk about the payroll part of it. I think there's an important slight twist here, right? Which is, okay, if the edict is we need to slash, or we can only go up this amount, you have to consider these moves in the context of, and this is what's extremely frustrating about analyzing really any baseball moves, especially for a lot of teams right now, where we only see the moves that the front offices make and not what restrictions they are actually working with. We just have no way of knowing that.
Just remember, every general manager wants more money to spend at all times.
Right. And so in this case, you have a situation where Jerry DePoto and Justin Hollander have said at the end of the season, payroll is going to go up. It was around $140 million this year. They said payroll is going to go up now, but how much is up? Because if they are under the impression, okay, we can go to, say, $150 million, but we are at a projected, you know, $130, $140, well, then if I only have $10 million to spend and I know it needs to go up, the only way I'm going to spend more than $10 million is if I get rid of payroll. And so that is a self-imposed limit, right? Who, for example, why do salary dumps happen? Because there are teams that are willing to do it. Teams like the Braves, contenders who say, sure, I'll take on Evan White for $15 million if it means I can have Jared Kelenic for minimum. I can do that. Yes. We can afford it because we are trying to make the roster better.
Because we have the money.
And we have the money to just absorb and do these things, right? The Mariners are operating in a self-imposed limit. And the front office, it's not easy for them. I'm sure it's frustrating. But they basically are forced to get creative within a limit that is not, but the optics are undeniably brutal. And the biggest challenge here is that even if you've cleared it all this money to do something else, it is not clear at all what that move is. And that is where Mariners fans are now left. We talk about sequencing so often in the offseason. We are now left to just look at this and say, look at this lineup and think, how in the world are you going to have a meaningfully better roster, which has been the intention, regardless of whatever restrictions you're working under, how are you going to pull this off? And right. We can talk about some of those options, but that is why it looks so brutal right now. And especially the Kelenic angle, for that to be the way to kind of, for his tenure to end, to use him in that kind of trade and not a trade to get better, right? It'd be one thing, we've talked about trading Kelenic over the last year or so to get better. This is a trade that might make them better, but right now it makes them worse.
It does not definitively make them better.
Right.
General manager Jerry DePoto is working in a box. He is working with restrictions. He has yet to show that, and it's been a long time, he's yet to show that he can do that.
Yeah.
There have been a lot of successes and there's been a lot of failures, but there are certain general managers who are better at working within those restrictions.
Right.
And Jerry has, this is, in my opinion, not a creative enough way to achieve the goal.
Well, I mean, it's incomplete. I mean, I don't know how to judge it.
So think about it like this, right? If you have so much pitching, just do Brian Wu.
Well, but that's the thing. And that's what we're going to see. And this is what's really frustrating.
You're trading away from a weakness.
Right. And so that's what they've gone so far backwards with the offense. And by the way, even what we talk about, just strictly focusing on, what are they projected for and what players are there? This team is about to look especially on offense, is going to look so different than I think. There have been real, real, real changes. I mean, this is, we talk about some of the pitching staffs across the league where it's like, oh, look at all these innings that walked out the door in free agency. I mean, the Mariners, the 2024 Mariners, or 2023 Mariners, right, having, it's, what is it, probably 16 or almost 1,500 at-bats, more plus, between Teoscar, clearly not coming back, Suarez, who played 162 games, Kelenic, who had over 400 plate appearances, right? Tom Murphy, who's a back catcher, had 200 plate appearances. He's clearly not coming back. There are a lot of
You're not going to watch. You're not coming back.
There's a lot of changes that are going to happen. And so they've put themselves in a situation where they basically have to, there's so much to do. They're giving themselves so much more work. And so it is an incomplete picture to judge.
Yeah.
But it's always been an incomplete picture to judge.
That's the thing. It always feels like if the next move is this, then it justifies what the first move was. But I think they're starting, if they have not already, lost the trust and the benefit of the doubt
from
the fan base.
That part I agree with.
Does that matter?
Well, that's the thing. It's their job to find the balance between recognizing what the fans are feeling and also doing their job in the best objective way that they can do it. Now, the other part about it is, okay, you say, all right, well, clearly they've made their roster worse, and I think they would admit that. That's fine. But also, if they had done nothing, that was also untenable. And so they clearly decided, we are going to try and pull off this extremely complicated series of moves that gets rid of some contracts that we don't like, instead of staying pat and doing something very real.
Simple.
Essentially what happened last year, right?
Where they ran it back.
That's the thing. Or not ran it back and made very really minor, boring, shitty additions. At this point, they can't do that. They are going to do something. Will it work? I agree that they don't necessarily have the benefit of the doubt for it to build a roster back to that point. But we know there's more stuff coming. And in that sense, it's fascinating.
Simply, like, from an emotional perspective, you're bummed because Jared Kelenic is a player that you were excited to think about. Mm-hmm. And
totally,
there was optimism there. And when you give a crap about a team, to see a tenure end that way is very, very disappointing.
Right. Yeah, because, again, if you completely strip the emotion out of all of it, and you say, and you look at the 2024 roster, or 23 roster, and you said, oh, how can they replace Teoscar, Suarez, Kelenic, whatever, like Marco, like, yeah, like those are players with some amount of value, but like in theory you can replace them, but it's so much to process. And what those players, these three players in particular, have meant to the Mariners over the last few years in very different ways, for all of them to go out at once is just like a lot. It's just a lot to kind of deal with now, but it's apparently very easy for the front office to just be like, yep, like they clearly have no problem just cutting the cord on all these guys.
Now, believe it or not, we are not a Mariners podcast. So let's talk about what this trade means for the Braves. Yeah. Atlanta entered the offseason with a gaping chasm in left field after letting Eddie Rosario walk in free agency. Mm-hmm. And they seem to have filled it in a very creative and unique way, taking on the Evan White and Marco Gonzalez contract in order to get their hands on Jared Kelenic, who remains a very promising player who is younger than like dudes on prospect lists still. Mm-hmm. And all he needs to be in Atlanta is hit eighth and play left field.
Yeah. The funny part is, like, he could maybe an optimistic, you know, projection for him this season is not that dissimilar from Eddie Rosario, you know, a version of Eddie Rosario that we just saw, who he just hit, you know, 255, 305, 450, you know, with 21 home runs. I would go lower on the batting average and probably higher on the homers, but
higher on the coolers kicked.
Hopefully, no, let's not repeat that, right? But for league minimum, you know, not for whatever Eddie Rosario was going to make. That's a really nifty move. I think he's already said, I think Anthopoulos already said that it's also potentially could be a platoon situation with him and Grissom, right?
Yep.
So that's a possibility. But again, it's a really nifty thing to just be able to like, oh yeah, like we could just take on those shitty contracts. And Marco Gonzalez is not nothing. Like that's someone that can help.
And they need rotation depth. A lot of their younger pitchers performed admirably last year. None of the depth was veteran depth. And that's exactly what Marco is.
Yep.
And there is value to that. If Marco Gonzalez picks up a baseball in October, something has gone wrong
for
the Atlanta Braves.
Yep.
However, there is immense value in having someone like that around during the regular season.
Yep.
And now what it allows the Braves to do is the offensive group is set. They need to rejuvenate the bench a little bit, sign some bench veterans, make a couple more bench-focused trades. Now it's time to go get one more free agent starter, you know,
or trade for one.
Mm-hmm. Whether that's Cease. There is a little, you know, you want to open up your third eye and Kelenic in a Cease trade.
Sure.
Whoa.
I mean, again, he would not be a headliner there, right? No. We know what the White Sox are asking for a ton, but yeah, sure. I mean, that's possible.
So I think it just frees up the Braves to think about one thing now for the rest of the winter, and that's helpful.
Yeah, and again, when you contrast it to the kind of move that it is from Seattle's perspective, it is there are teams that are just like, oh yeah, we'll take that on because we're trying to get better, and the very specific cost of these things is not that important. And it's not like the Braves are blasting into the luxury tax. Like they're clearly working within some level of restriction too, but it's still $50 or so million higher than Seattle, if not more. And so they obviously have a much better roster to work with to begin with. So because of that, they're just in such a good position. And I've been always so impressed with how aggressive Atlanta is in improving in really creative ways. Because that's the other thing. And as I said at the beginning of the season, you can come up with all kinds of crazy fake trades, and we'll keep doing that. You have no freaking clue what these teams are cooking up.
No idea.
And this is a great example of that. This is not on anybody's radar in any respect. I guess you could have maybe someone thought Kelenic was a weird, interesting buy low left field candidate for us Atlanta, but this is a funky one, but that's the fun of it. I mean, as frustrating as it is for Mariners fans, like this it's is a very interesting trade.
Very interesting.
Very, very interesting trade.
Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we will look at the winter meetings from a happier perspective, at least for Jordan. Talk a little bit about where things stand with Ohtani, Soto, and all the other big names.
Hey everyone, producer Chris here with a brand new housekeeping note about our merch. Basically, we have a bunch of new stuff. So if you've been looking for a baseball Barbacast themed beanie or bucket hat, or even a t-shirt with one of those cool pockets on the chest, well, you can stop looking and start buying because they are all available right now, just in time for winter. Just go to podswag.com/baseball and don't leave yourself clothesless this winter. That's podswag.com/baseball.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. Oh my God, Barry Bonds just walked by and said he's going to return to play this year.
Oh man, the winter meetings, you just never know. You never know what you're going to see.
Never know what you're going to see.
I think I know I will not be seeing Barry Bonds this week.
That
would love to be wrong.
Is very true. Speaking of things you see at the winter meetings, let's just talk about some of the funny things we saw at the bar last night.
Sure. Always an important segment. And yeah, again, like, It's just a fascinating combination because it's when you have the mingling of the media and the team, because during the season, when you're the media team team employee interactions is maybe on the field during BP or in the, you know, obviously you have the managers talking to the scrums and whatever.
But we're kept apart.
Or yeah. But this is when everyone is kind of becomes equal. Standing
where everyone's waiting for a beer.
Everyone is waiting for a beer. Everyone is standing there waiting, you know, to have their card run, whatever. It is a great equalizer.
Hey, and just hey, how are you?
We're both just here. You're not wearing baseball pants.
Oh, that's crazy. If you want to know what your baseball team's director of international scouting orders at the bar,
We got you.
Yeah. Funny things we saw last night. Ken Rosenthal. Have you heard of him? Yes, you have. Headed down an escalator. A gaggle of reporters for The Athletic who work with Ken Rosenthal at the bottom. And one of them, Matt Gelb, covers the Phillies, goes, "Hey, Ken." And Ken clearly just thinks that Matt is like a baseball fan, like an attention seeker, and not someone he communicates with on a, you know, weekly basis, if not more. And Ken just goes, "Hello." And Matt's like, did he just big league me?
I hope so.
Yes.
Because Ken is the nicest person. So
Ken is nice. It was very funny.
He's probably got more leeway to pull off shit like that than most.
Bigger fish to fry. And like, thinking about the stuff with like Ken and Jeff, and there are really in this building,
yeah,
eight people who could break a story.
Yeah.
Who could break
probably less than that.
Probably less. Right?
By the way, shouts out Ryan Divish. He did have the bulk of the Mariners trade.
Yes.
From the sky, apparently. He was on the plane on the way to Nashville when he broke that deal. But correct, to your point, like, it is funny to just, when you see Ken or Jeff Passan or John Heyman, you know, scurry off to a corner with a text, it's hard not to be like, oh shit, here we go. Most of the time, it's nothing.
But it is, and then at night, it's like those folks are not having a beer.
Yeah.
Because it's like, well, they have to, what if, you know, Jared Kelenic gets traded?
But it is funny, you know, talking to like the Mariners people and other Mariners writers who, because oftentimes, and I know this is true for some beats, like they'll get a heads up, especially here, because they know like, hey, like we want to be here to hang out and socialize. And it's like a lot of times those guys will get heads up like, hey, just take it easy tonight because you might have some work to do.
Yeah, we got you.
Which is very funny.
You were laughed at by Jeff Passan last night?
Potentially. From a distance.
From a distance.
Jeff saw me from a distance. He was going up the escalator, and I think he'd seen the Twitter video that now has way too many views.
Way too many views.
And I was like, thanks, Jeff. And he was like, haha, sorry. Jeff didn't make the trade.
Yeah.
But my favorite thing that I saw, again, you know, we talk about teams, we talk about the media members, is Scott Boras, right? So Scott Boras is obviously here, and the Boras crew runs deep. They obviously, there's every agency is here, but
no one runs deep.
Nobody runs. They don't travel in a pack in a way that the Boras Corp does. And it's truly calm. I mean, it looks like it's out of a movie. They look like the part of the mob, right? They basically rolled in, and they're all wearing the same thing. And then Scott's like in the back, and it really I just love it because it makes me feel like the baseball world is like kind of not a simulation, but it's like it is this grand performance. Like,
yes,
it's part of the, we are all, they're all different characters, and I'm glad that they play up to that, because most people just kind of exist and move around these spaces like people. But to have
Scott Boras is like, I'm a
but
character.
To have certain, and this is sort of true even for certain front office members who will travel with at least a couple other of their AGMs and whatnot. It just
they
makes
act
me laugh
like,
every time.
They act like they're politicians and they need Secret Service.
It's like, coming through.
It's like no one is trying to assassinate the assistant general manager of the Reds or whatever. Like,
right,
you don't need that.
No, but it, I love it. I hope it never changes. So anyway, we'll see. And I assume I am looking for, again, when we kind of look forward to this week and spin it forward here, I assume Scott Boras will speak at some point, and that is something we look forward to every
year.
Hell yeah. When he lets it rip. And I think this is a good transition to kind of what are the moves we're expecting to see or not see, or what could happen here. Let's talk about that.
Let's get the simplest thing out of the way. Yoshinobu Yamamoto is almost certainly not signing this week. He has met with, or he's meeting with teams, not meeting with them here. That decision is not coming. He's relatively early in the posting window. If I were you, I would take Yamamoto. And if you're a fan of a team that cares about signing him, I would crumple that up and put it in your back pocket, and I'd save it for December 28th or whatever. Okay? Let's get that out of the way. Let's talk about Shohei Ohtani.
Tell me about him.
So he doesn't play that field.
It's a DH. Who cares? What's the big deal?
Everything else that he does. This is a huge deal.
So we had some rumblings at the end of last week that he was meeting with teams in LA, final suitors, whatever, and that maybe a decision would be expected at some time this week. Now, maybe this is obvious. There is 0% chance that Ohtani and or his agent, Nezbolelo, are going to be here.
I think there's a chance Nezbolelo is going to be
here. Okay.
There is a negative 8,002% chance that Shohei Ohtani is in the state of Tennessee.
Yes. I agree.
Ever?
Until they have a big league team.
Shohei Ohtani has never been to Tennessee.
Can they get a big league team in time for Shohei to play in that state?
That'll be the first time he's in the state.
Okay.
Shohei is not here. I don't think a decision is coming while we're here. I think we will get some sort of rumbling about who is in or who is out. We will get news about him. I do not think we will get anything definitive about where he is signing.
There was some speculation that I saw Ken Rosenthal had some speculation that he's maybe decided, but now it's about hammering out the contract, because what's unique about the Ohtani situation is the contract is going to be so big and so absurd that, again, when we compare it to 2017, that contract was the opposite. It was going to be so simple and so nothing.
They decided before the terms were agreed upon, because the terms were inevitable. There was a certain amount of money that the Angels can spend.
Yeah.
And so the way that...
There was no negotiations.
Correct. The way that Angels employees, many of them, found out that Ohtani was going to the Angels was the public statement from Nezbolelo saying he has picked the Angels.
Whereas in this case...
As Whit Merrifield walks by us, right in front of us.
Free agent, Whit Merrifield. Coming to...
Job seeker.
Interesting fit for Whit. Anyway, whereas in this case, even if the Ohtani negotiations and discussions are a very small circle of people in each front office, they will, like, okay, say this is true. Say, you know, he has picked the Dodgers, whatever. Say Friedman knows, okay, it's the Dodgers. Great. Now, it's just going back and forth about, I mean, literally the biggest contract in baseball history. That's not something you're necessarily going to figure out in one phone call, even if he has said, yes, we would like to be a Dodger. And so it is not going to be as simple as CAA releasing a statement that Ohtani has picked the Dodgers, because it is going to be so much more complicated than that. And that is why I'm fascinated to see the degree to which this leaks out at all over the next few weeks, because it's hard to fathom a contract of this magnitude being completed to the point where we have that and it's all announced at once, or they can keep it under wraps. That said, you saying I don't think it's going to happen, I have no saying anything with any sort of conviction about the situation is useless. So I guess I am also not expecting it to happen here, but also I won't be surprised by anything at this point. So that's where we're at with Ohtani. It is clearly holding up certain teams, at the very least. I would say the Dodgers seem to be a team that could move in a lot of different other directions if they don't get him or even if they do get him. And so that might be holding up certainly the starting pitching trade market, maybe even the starting pitching for Asian market. And
Whit Merrifield just emerged from the bathroom.
Okay.
In a what team jersey is he wearing?
You think he signed in the bathroom?
Yeah, he signed in the bathroom. Right. Nope. Oh, he's signing an autograph what he's signing.
No, yeah, that's not a contract.
That's not a contract?
Whit Merrifield close to signing. We could report that.
That's buzz.
Just saw Whit Merrifield sign.
Saw Whit Merrifield sign.
Spot the lie.
Dot, dot, dot.
You can't. Anyway, so Ohtani, let's move Ohtani to the side. Let's move Yamamoto to the side.
Juan Soto.
All right, let's move to, again, the Boris portion of the proceedings, because as our dear friend Danny Wexelman walks up to the desk.
Hi, Hello, Danny.
The best. Because not only is now Juan Soto and the discussions about him at the front of our minds, because it might be a thing that happens here, but the next four free agents on the top of the board, Bellinger, Snell, Montgomery, Chapman, Jung-Hoo Lee, who was posted today, are also Boris guys. Not to mention Dylan Cease, another you know, one who could be in trade talks. So there's a version where those are the guys we are talking about in the same way that we were for the last few years.
Another hotel ballroom, another year. Scott Boris controls the cards.
But to your, what do you think though? Like, moving the Boris part aside, like, what is the part of the market you do expect to see
Soto
start moving?
Soto.
You think Soto will happen here?
I think Soto happens over here. I think the Padres don't have a choice if they need to get the payroll under $200 million, which is the goal. And I think...
And then have actual people throw baseballs for them.
Then they, yeah, because it's not as simple as get under 200. It's get under 200 and then acquire...
And then replace 600 innings.
Adults who own baseball gloves and cleats who can pitch, right? Like, that's almost more important than getting under 200. I think Soto happens here. I think we talked about this with Eric Langenhagen. I think it's just how many different arms can they put into the organization?
Yeah, and I do like that the reporting after your conversation with Eric
mirrored what we were talking
about. Was basically exactly what we were talking about.
Every pitcher, please.
And the Yankees fans who are balking at these absurd prices, it's like, I understand that. However, I'm going to be very clear here, and this applies to the Mariners. I don't think they're getting Soto. But when you're seeing all the trade proposals for Soto and you see fans, you know, hugging on to their prospects and saying, no, we can't do Drew Thorpe and Will Warren. The degree to which they will not care so fast if the Yankees acquire Juan Soto, I am so confident.
Padres fan.
That's how it should be.
Sideways as things have gone the last year and a half with the team, having Soto around,
it was like, wow, that's a lot. And then it was like, holy
that's
shit.
Fun.
That's awesome, right? And that is, I think, how it's going to be for whatever team manages to land him. But to your point, like, it does feel like, especially because the Padres probably want to proceed with their business in some form, that feels like, and because we've had enough reporting about some level of aggression in terms of the discussions between the Yankees, we've heard about the Blue Jays, maybe Seattle gets involved, probably not. Cubs, another team that has the farm to kind of go after a bat like him. It does seem like there's enough people going for it,
correct,
and that the Padres want to get that done. That, you know, but is there a stalemate between them and waiting for Ohtani?
No,
probably not.
I think it's a team that realistically doesn't believe it will get Ohtani, pivoting early and striking for sure.
Right. And that's also why the Yankees feel so realistic, because they've been out of, we assume that they're not even remotely close to Ohtani, so they don't really have to worry about that part. They need to add offense badly, and Juan Soto is a perfect fit for them, no matter how many pitchers they end up putting into this deal. And that's why I think that's what's going to happen. And I get annoyed at future Yankees, one of my least favorite things in baseball discussion.
I love it.
It's hilarious,
it's so good,
but also exhausting that Yankees fans think they're entitled to every good player on every other team.
Just like me. Hilarious, but exhausting.
However, perfect comp. That's why you're at Yankee Stadium all the time. But in this case, I'm like, looking at them, like,
they
should do that. They should absolutely make that happen. So we will see if they can find some common ground there. But I agree that feels like the biggest move that could happen.
Anything else, Jordan?
I mean, again, like, their teams do meet with, as we just mentioned with Merrifield. I mean, not that he's going to sign for $100 million, but there are free agents that do come here to meet with teams. It is an opportunity to do that. because here they can meet not only with front office, but they can meet with the managers, right? The managers are also here. So that is I'm not surprised that some players, some free agents kind of view that as an opportunity. So we'll see if we see anybody else, you know, rolling through at some point. But we'll see. I think the starting pitching market from both a free agent and trade standpoint is one that I would expect to still move to some degree, even if we don't have, you know, Yamamoto. I think that next tier down, maybe an E-Rod, maybe a Giolito. I know Imanaga was just posted, so maybe it's a little premature there. But, you know, Stroman, we've heard absolutely nothing about, right? Waka, kind of guys in that level that maybe we start to hear some action. But I would really like to start seeing some more move on the offensive side of things. It's just hard to really project what that's going to look like.
That's it. We will be back later tonight for another podcast here on Monday evening with a potential special guest.
Yeah, we'll see.
Friend
we'll
see. Of the show.
I mean, there's clearly people around.
We'll see.
We'll see what that looks like. But we will be recording every 2 times a day. So looking forward to doing that. And we'll see if Seattle does something. We'll see if the Orioles.
No.
Remember them? No. Jake's like, yeah, they're going to do it.
Is it better to make a trade that crushes your hopes and dreams or to not make any moves at all?
Right. Because the Orioles, it's also like, do something. And they're like, no, we're chilling. It's like, what is more maddening? I guess we'll find out.
You.
Yeah, there's, who knows? Anyway, that's the podcast. Thank you, Chris Tyler, who's also here for producing.
Chris, say something so people know you're here.
Hi.
That's him.
Being in the Uber, Uber last night and the dude being like, where are you from, Chris? And Chris being like, I'm from North Carolina. And the guy's like, okay, sure. Yeah.
Sure.
That's a North Carolina accent.
But yeah, we'll be back later on Monday night. Thank you all for listening.
Goodbye.
Goodbye from Nashville.
SiriusXM Podcasts.